It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. A happy Monday to each and every one of you, and thank God we are we're not in the path of that now tropical storm, Ida. It was a terrible storm that came ashore and pummeled so many communities. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the latest developments out of Afghanistan. 3:29 tomorrow. So we are 3:29 p.m. tomorrow will be the official completion point. Let's start, though, with a story. Let's pick up the pieces from last week. And we have Breaking Brett Jensen with us on the line. It's good to have you here, Brett Jensen. And I know last week, as school was getting ramped up, a report came out that said CMPD's been picking up quite a few weapons, handguns, as you might mention, there in some of the schools because of the youngsters, you know, wanting to strap it on there and be ready for whatever may happen. Brett Jensen, what happened? What's the story here?
So a few years ago, unfortunately, when the child was shot and killed, the student was shot and killed at a high school here in Mecklenburg County, there was a big, there seemed to be a big rash of guns after that that were constantly being seized at high schools.
Right.
And it was like a big deal. And, you know, CMS was like, hey, we're going to invest in this $1 million program. And, you know, it was safe. Like, there was all kinds of things, which the program wound up being a complete bust and just a waste of money, and CMS trying to sue and get its money back. Like, it was just an ordeal. And then COVID happened, and then everyone went away. Well, the return of students on Wednesday, you know, marked the return of weapons as well on CMS campuses.
What the heck?
And it basically went completely under the radar because everyone was fixated on, you know, the students returning and the mask mandate and, you know, whatever. And so just here's a little bit of rundown of just, we're talking the first 3 days of school.
Sure.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Right.
This is what we got.
Okay.
So on Thursday at Mallard Creek High School, a student robbed another student.
Wow.
And then when they went to the student, they found, you know, the one that allegedly robbed someone, they found a knife, a stolen firearm, and marijuana. Okay.
Oh boy, those are three bad things to have together.
Well, and then also on Thursday at West Mech High School, people said, hey, so-and-so's got a gun. And then they went and searched the student, and they found a BB gun that was modeled after a Glock. So it looked like a real Glock, but it was a BB gun. But this person was also charged with, I believe, a felony as well for bringing a weapon to school.
Okay.
So then on Friday, here's a doozy, Brett.
Mm-hmm.
On Friday at West Charlotte, they noticed that there were weapon accessories sitting in the front seat of a student's car.
Weapon accessories, okay.
And so when they searched the car, they found three firearms in the car. They found stolen property. They found marijuana and also like a handgun. And it's just, and that's if you're keeping score at home, that's six weapons or, you know, that they have found in the first 3 days of school. And really, it happened over 2 days.
And two lids
and
a week.
And then at Harding High School, two groups of students.
Oh, boy.
Were in a multiple series of fights and altercations.
Jeez.
Two have been charged and several others have been suspended. And welcome back to school.
This is insane. Okay, first of all, weapons accessories. Are we talking like laser sight? Are we talking suppressor?
It didn't go into the details, but yeah, I mean, there are a million, maybe scopes, you know,
scopes,
suppressors. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, none of them were listed, but
on the front seat of the car,
consider as weapon accessories.
But on the front seat of the car, like
in
brazen,
the car in plain view,
brazen,
in plain view.
So do these students then, is this an automatic expulsion or will they be rerouted? Well, look, Glock BB gun, that may be kind of tricky. But the rest of the stuff, dope and multiple firearms, does that get you a one-way ticket out of the CMS school system, or do you get to some kind of a diversion at that point then?
No, you automatically are charged with felonies. And what, you know, maybe if you're 14 years old, you know, you're not, I think, technically allowed to leave school, but if you go to jail, I know that with the Mecklenburg County Sheriff, we have the largest juvenile detention center in the state, and they provide high school classes inside the detention center, which I believe is the only detention center for juveniles that provide high school classes. And I think it's mandatory. So you end up going to, I mean, you may end up going to jail, but you may end up being able to get your high school diploma in the juvenile detention center within Mecklenburg County. But yeah, I mean, you're obviously immediately suspended and charged with a felony for bringing a weapon on campus.
I only ask that because, you know, I know with the Biden administration now in control, they may be going back to the old Obama administration, which was the whole end of the classroom to prison pipeline, restorative justice kind of stuff that we've heard discussed extensively, especially at the federal level, which actually it was that policy, just parenthetically, this will not count against your time. But it's that policy that actually contributed to what happened in Parkland, where because you had Nicholas Cruz, you know, he was on everybody's radar for being a lunatic that wanted to kill people. And then he did it one day. And it was because Robert Runcie, the superintendent of schools there, was best friends with Arne Duncan. And he was Mr. Restorative Justice. So I'm just wondering if people are showing up at school and they've got firearms and firearms fixings and accessories on the front seat of the car. Like, that tells me this is not a guy who's worried about his AP calculus test. This is a guy who's conducting business of another kind. And he probably is connected to I would guess he's probably connected to somebody who is selling firearms in an illegal fashion, like out of the trunk of a car, you know, maybe.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is, Brett, you know, and again, the fact that this all went basically
first day of school
Wednesday was the first day, but yeah, Thursday and Friday. So all these happened over 2 days, Thursday and Friday. And here's the thing, that when weapons were being found after the shooting,
right,
at Butler High School, mm-hmm. that there were always, if they found a weapon, like every news agency would just descend on that high school and sure. be parked outside and doing live reports mm-hmm. all day from that high school. A gun was found in a locker, a gun was found in a car. Mm-hmm. And here we had 6 weapons
That's
in
right.
2 days, and I don't remember seeing anything.
So then I would say Mr. and Mrs. Mask Mandate, the intrepid reporters, air quotes, they may want to also go to the health, convene the health department portion of the county commission and make them outlaw guns at schools.
Well, I believe guns are
outlawed. No, but this has to be a health mandate. No guns at the schools because of health. And I'm not making light of this. I'm saying it because obviously there are rules and there are laws, but nobody's taking the rules or the laws seriously. And they need to be taken much more seriously because you're literally talking about 6 possible Columbines happening, man. It's terrible.
Well, and like I said, a student was actually robbed
yes.
by another student.
The heck?
And they found knife, marijuana, and a gun.
Yeah, and I guarantee you the description was he was wearing a mask.
Oh, absolutely. You know students,
they're compliant.
Of course they're going to wear a mask.
Brett Jensen, you have done a great job bringing the story forward, and we're going to keep watching the story. I'm serious. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterville Show, and I am happy to be here with you. Let me grab this call real quick because it's connected back to what we just heard from Brett Jensen with the busting of students with firearms at the schools last week, which really hadn't been covered anywhere. Bo, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Hello, Bo. Yes, sir. Are you there, Bo?
Hi. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay. What's on your mind?
Oh, so in Charlotte Mecklenburg schools, if you have at-risk students or anything like that that don't go to the group homes or the correctional facilities, they are reintroduced back into the school system and they go to Turning Point Academy.
Turning Point Academy. Okay.
Yes, sir. And that's, I think, covers 6th through 12th grade.
Okay.
And off Morse Chapel Road. But my father actually works there.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that's very helpful. That's good to know that there is a diversion there that they send them to. You know, we certainly don't want to see people getting put right in jail, unless of course they actually should go to jail, which is going to be determined by the circumstances of each of these stories. You know, it's something that we kind of got used to not seeing as much of during the COVID time was these mass events because we were not all congregating together there in the schools. And now that that has come back, we are going to see a lot of people, I think, involving themselves in some of the bad behaviors that we've seen throughout our recent decades. The society around us has gotten increasingly violent for a lot of reasons. I mean, there are a lot of reasons, not the least of which is, and I say this a lot, even though, you know, I'm a conservative, or you might want to say I lean like a libertarian, you know, stuff like that. The reality is we have a culture that celebrates and elevates death and nihilism. We don't have a culture that celebrates the dignity of life, and that's, I think, fair to say. I think it's fair to say about Western culture, broadly speaking, but certainly with the behavior that we're seeing over in Afghanistan, the viciousness towards women and children, I think it's safe to say that the Western societies don't have a corner on that nihilism. There is a great deal of that out there. And when you have a culture of death, which is what we really do, I mean, if you think about it, politicians are routinely supported for going further and further on the issue of abortion or partial birth abortion. Politicians who are responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands of elderly patients there at congregate living facilities during COVID are celebrated with Emmy Awards and book deals. And nobody wants to talk about the death of the elderly. But the death of the elderly in those conditions and the disposability of the young life at the other end of the spectrum are both huge parts of the culture of death under which we live. And frankly, I mean, I'll just say it. I don't care. I have my opinions. You can have your opinion. You can disagree. It's totally up to you. It's America, and that's what makes us awesome. This culture of death, this culture of nihilism extends all the way out. Crime, murder in the streets, looting, the epidemic of child pornography and things like that. And I'm not a Bible thumper. I'm not a guy who's going to tell you that you're all going to go to hell or anything like that. It's not what I do. I'm somebody who deals with the news of the day. But you'd have to be pretty dense to not realize that life has been substantially cheapened in our society. Child life has been that and the elderly have been among the most cheapened. And I would go one step further and say female child life is probably the most devalued cultural component in our society, because if it wasn't the case, you wouldn't have human traffickers. You wouldn't have the Taliban treating women and girls the way they do. It's a horror show all the way around, and nobody will lift their voice to it because it's hard to do that. It's hard to lift your voice in defense of the innocent. Wait, why is that so hard to speak up for the innocent? Like, why is that difficult? Why is it difficult for these politicians? There's one in the White House right now, doesn't want to answer questions, doesn't want to talk about what's going on in Afghanistan. Well, what happens when the videos start coming out 2 days from now and we see the scale of the abuse and the murder and the rape and the things like that are going to be going on? I don't know what's going to happen. Perhaps the squad will go over and try to reason with these maniacs. I'm not optimistic because, unfortunately, standing up for life, there's not a lot of money in that racket. News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Looking at the at this fight that we've got going on, so we've got a couple of things happening. Obviously, we've got Tropical Storm Ida, which was Hurricane Ida. We've got the COVID situation, such as it is, and we have, of course, what's going on in Afghanistan. I am starting to see connectivity between these topics. And here's what I mean by this. I know there's a big debate about why is it that this group of people feels this way about masks and this group of people feels this way about masks? Why does this group of people feel this way about vaccinations? Why does this group of people feel hostile to vaccinations? You know, it is an interesting divide. We depending on what channel you watch, like if you put on MSNBC, NBC News, you will likely see COVID and the conversation surrounding Hurricane Ida you're going to see very little on Afghanistan. If you put on Fox, you're going to see a lot on Afghanistan, and you're going to see a fair amount on Hurricane Ida, and then, of course, you're going to see very, very little on the COVID thing. And then you go to CNN, and I don't even know what the hell they're talking about half the time, because it's usually involving Jim Acosta and Chris Cuomo, and they're just yelling about Donald Trump. But you can tune into whatever channel you want and watch that particular thing that's going to undergird what you believe, which is, I know, confirmation bias. It's nothing new, but I want to acknowledge that that is the case. But I think there's a deeper divide here. Why do people get so impassioned and inflamed about the need to wear masks, and others get so offended and disgusted about the need to wear masks? Now, here's what I'll say, because I want to cover my bases. I've been vaccinated, and I think you should wear the mask, okay? So that way, there's no question. I know there's been a run of talk show hosts losing their lives over the course of a period of time. They were all anti-vaxxers, and I think they didn't like masks very much. But I'm just telling you, you know, do what you got to do to keep yourself alive, because I want to keep you in my audience. It's purely a selfish motivation to keep every one of you in the audience. But there's got to be a deeper issue here at play. The deeper issue has got to be something about how you're oriented. Here's why I say this. I don't normally talk like this in generalities, but for the purposes of the discussion, I'm going to lift the ban. I believe that liberals, by and large, are bought into and endorsing institutions, right? It's why you have so many liberals on college campuses. It's why you have so many liberals working in the education business, in public schools, right? It's why they will hang on every word of Fauci and Walensky and Zients and the people on that COVID reaction team. It's why people who have an orientation towards liberalism will wear the mask, because they feel like it's important to show people that they're on team mask and vax. Now, what do conservatives do? Conservatives, by and large, outside of, say, social institutions and churches, are not joiners as a rule. They'll be parts of sports leagues. They'll be with people like that. They'll do a barbecue, what have you. But by and large, conservatives want to be left alone. It's what makes them conservative. The people in government, and when I say people in government, I'm throwing your usual, you know, your Adam Schiff, your Chuck Schumer, your Nancy Pelosi types, make conservatives skin crawl. Makes their skin crawl. And they believe, by and large, that those people deploy the power of government or institution as an effort to hem in your rights, your opportunities, what have you. You just have to look at the gun issue. And I'm going to play you a humdinger of a clip coming up here in a little bit involving a conversation between the CDC director and Elizabeth Cohen over on CNN. The CDC is now going to get in the business of guns. They're going to start figuring out how they need to be the people who regulate the guns in our country. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control. I didn't know firearms were a disease, but we are going to look at that in a little bit. So the fact of the matter is, when you talk to people who do not share your politics, okay, and they come down on that ideological split, it's these people who are the, quote, institutionalists. The institutionalists that are the people that are most liberal. They suddenly now love the CIA. They suddenly now love the Pentagon. Forever, liberals hated the CIA, hated the Pentagon, hated the national security apparatus in this country. I mean, the left was constantly coddling the old Soviets back in the day. They started in 1917 and kept at it until the collapse of the Berlin Wall. They even had people who reached out to try to get Reagan defeated by you know, utilizing interviews and Ted Kennedy to try to get, you know, the Soviet leadership on television in the United States. Reagan was evil. He was a bully. He was terrible because he wanted to stand up to the communists. Well, what do you see now in the streets? You see Antifa. You see Marxists. You see this on college campuses. You see the cancel culture. All of this stuff is very institutionalized. And conservatives don't run around deploying that kind of stuff. So when you see this divide with the masks, and you see this divide with the vaccines, and you see this divide with looting and rioting in the streets, it's because the institutions are what matter to the progressive left. And I know what you're saying. You're saying, you just mentioned a Law and Order reference, Brett. What are you talking about? Ah, I did. Did you see who got parole on Friday? Sirhan Sirhan, the murderer of Robert Kennedy, got paroled. He's going to get paroled. He's going to go free. The institutions of public safety have been co-opted, taken over, and warped by this same ideology. Defund the police. Let the criminals run free. Let the people get shot. What have you, because this is all about justice. It's not justice. It's not justice. It's about, as Mark Levin talks about, it's about cultural Marxism. But it's this institutional divide, and you will never bridge this gap. You will never bridge this gap. You will never get the left to get rid of the masks. You will never get the right to embrace the mask. I'm just telling you, it's just how it's going to be. Wait till I give you the breakdown on what's happening with Biden, though. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Let's check in with Jim in San Diego. Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today, Jim? Oh, he's not there yet. Okay, hold on. Let me go to Jim. Okay, Jim, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, thank you for letting me write on, sir.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, I was just saying the coach did a wonderful job of detailing the nexus of the crisis, the leadership problem that we're having, mm-hmm. particularly in the executive office. And one thing that he said was very revealing. He said that he identifies, he has empathy for these people that have lost their loved ones. He said that he feels like he has a black hole in the middle of his chest that he's getting sucked into, and there's no escape from it.
That's right.
Right. Okay, this is a symptom that is real. This is a very real thing you get with depression and PTSD. It will happen at any time. It will be triggered, and by anything could trigger it. The dog barking, of mm-hmm. putting money in a vending machine, anything could trigger it, and you are gone, and you are immobile for minutes at a time until you can come back and you can say, I'm okay, and I can function again. This is the reason why the 25th Amendment should be invoked, because he has PTSD, he has experienced trauma, he has tragedy that's now affecting him in his
but he's surrounded by complete and total yes men. You don't even hear leaks coming out of this White House. It means that everybody who's working on Team Biden understands that it's Team Biden or bust. So nobody is going to invoke the 25th Amendment. Well, look, the dirty secret is we're stuck until at least January of 23. And that's a problem, because we're talking about going through Christmas of 2021, Christmas of 2022, and then you get to January of 2023 before you get any opportunity to go at this president for this horrible, terrible, ill-conceived, atrocious so-called strategy that he concocted, or Hunter concocted, or someone concocted, that got a lot of people killed. And I don't want to hear another word about 130,000 got evacuated. You know, the people that are getting killed are our allies. They're cutting their tongues out. Do you know that? You know the interpreters are having their tongues cut out of their yes. mouths as punishment.
Yes, and they're offering them a seat at the UN. Isn't that ridiculous?
Of course it's ridiculous. But it's consistent with the UN's values. The UN does not value life. The UN values money and power. Well, look,
globalism.
But it's even worse than that, okay? It's gangsterism. The UN,
right.
if you think about the way the UN runs things, they couldn't even get a straight approach on COVID-19. You had Tedros bought off like a crooked politician in a small town in the 1930s because Dutch Schultz is there as part of his trial. Okay, that's what you have. By the way, that was upstate New York. That is what you have. It is the United Nations is institutionalized gangsterism. It's why they hate America.
Right, and the reason that he is negotiating with them at all is because he embraces and empathizes with their gangland mentality of the Taliban.
Well, I mean, look, the Taliban have got $85 billion in armament now. $85 billion. Now, what are they going to do with those weapons? Tell me what they're going to do with those weapons, Jim.
Well, obviously the small arms they can put right into service, but a lot of these weapons that people say, the armored vehicles and stuff that we've left behind, that these people say, oh, they can't be serviced. They're not high enough.
They're going to sell them. They're going to sell them, man.
They
this is
take the computer chips.
Correct.
And the electronics out of them and use them to make IEDs and other devices.
That's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to sell this stuff. This stuff's all going to get liquidated. And it's going to end up in different places being utilized as either weapons or equipment or what have you. And this is the fundamental problem with this Biden approach. This is not about pulling out of Afghanistan and ending a forever 20-year war. It's none of that. What this is about is the idea that this group of people, Anthony Blinken, fake Jake Sullivan, Millie, the rest of these people, they have desired for a long time that America come down off the peg, that we are not special or better than any other country. There is a concerted, you want to look at Howard Zinn. Look at Howard Zinn. Look at CRT. All of this is about messaging from the United States of America to the rest of the world that, we're nothing special. You know what we are? We're a paycheck. It's why people want to sneak into the country and they want to make money and they want to outflow that money back to their homeland and not continue to build this place to be what it has been for so long for so many. So, see, we're just viewed as a meal ticket or a place where you can get some money and send it back home. We want people who want to come in here and be part of this country to become Americans. Those interpreters, those people who worked with our military, are exactly the kind of people you want coming in here. In the same way that the people who fled South Vietnam and the people who fled Cambodia were the people that you wanted to have come here because they believed in America. They wanted to be part of America. Another great hour straight ahead. This was awesome. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. 704-570-1110 is the number to be a part of the conversation. Coming up in a matter of minutes, I'm going to give you some analysis on what I think is going on with Joe Biden. But as promised, I had mentioned this earlier. This is a conversation between Elizabeth Cohen, who is the chief medical correspondent at CNN, and Rachel Walensky, who is the CDC boss there at the Centers for Disease Control. This is a excerpt of a conversation they're having about how it is that Walensky now wants to get into the gun regulating business. Cut 15.
Sharing it exclusively with CNN.
This is actually a stunning moment that a director of the CDC is even talking about this issue, is even using the word guns. It hasn't happened in years and years. Every day we turn on the news and there are more young people dying. I swore to the president and to this country that I would protect your health. This is clearly one of those moments, one of those issues that is harming America's health. But there's a reason why your predecessors didn't address it.
Why?
Perhaps.
I want to share.
We're used to hearing Dr. Rochelle Walensky talk about the COVID-19 pandemic.
Vaccine safety is a top priority.
This is her first interview on America's epidemic of gun violence.
One recent weekend in Chicago, we had 74 people shot. That same weekend, a party in Florida, 5 teenagers shot. That same weekend, a man in New York City, in Times Square, shot in the back. And the list goes on and on, week after week after week. Can anything be done about this?
Something has to be done about this. Mm-hmm. So 40,000 firearm-related deaths a year, 120,000 serious firearm-related injuries per year. The scope of the problem is just bigger than we're even hearing about. And when your heart wrenches every day, you turn on the news, you're only hearing the tip of the iceberg.
So 70,000 people die every year from firearms. 140,000 get shot every year. So what's the cure? Well, the cure is going to be restricting your rights. And this is exactly the sort of thing that Biden and Harris, you knew, were going to do during a time in which everybody is focused on COVID, or everybody is focused on Afghanistan, or everybody is focused on these other things. This is what they do, and they do it very well. Gun ownership is the only crisis in America in which the law-abiding owner of the firearm is punished more than the criminal with a firearm. Because as I mentioned in that last hour, the belief in institutions, right? So of course you would have the Centers for Disease Control be in charge of your Second Amendment rights, because institutionally the Centers for Disease Control are absolutely pristine, untouched, unsullied, well, is that the case? Rachel Walensky, Dr. Rachel Walensky is a Harvard liberal from Massachusetts. The only way she gets anywhere near a firearm is with her security detail and protective officers that help to secure her building. I guarantee you she's never fired a weapon. I guarantee you that Dr. Cohen has never fired a weapon. If you haven't fired a weapon, you might think guns are scary. There's ways to demystify this. It's called training. I'm about 1,000 feet from a large shooting facility where I'm sitting right here at WBT. There is a huge gun range right over here. And you can go in there and you can fire a gun. You can ask for an instructor to train you. You can learn the safe usage of firearms. When your kid goes to school, your kid's going to learn about climate change. Your kid's going to learn about sex positions. Your kid's going to learn about CRT. Your kid might learn about how to stop somebody who's bleeding, or what to do if somebody is choking, or what to do if somebody has an allergic reaction to peanuts, or what to do if somebody needs CPR. They'll never teach your kid how to safely handle a firearm. Why not? Because firearms are evil. Guns are dangerous. Guns kill people. So do gang members. So do cars. So does the Taliban. But you're the one target that they're going to come after. And the fact that the CDC is going to get involved, and that they're going to go and they're going to bring Beto into the mix, is a huge issue. I'm sorry. The Second Amendment is written on the parchment on purpose, and it ain't going anywhere. You got 400 million guns in this country. You got about 3 billion rounds of ammunition. I would really like to sit down with these nudniks who think that they can tell you what you can do for your self-defense, and maybe introduce them to safe gun ownership, safe management of your firearms, safe storage of your firearms. You heard Brett Jensen at the beginning of that last hour, and he's telling you about all these guns that are in the schools at CMS. Guess what? It's illegal to have a gun in a school. It's illegal. Son of a gun, what are we going to do with these people that don't want to follow our laws? Oh, gosh. Why isn't Rachel Walensky working on cancer or heart disease? Why isn't she working on accidents? Why isn't she working on chronic lower respiratory diseases? Why isn't she working on stroke? All of those, including Alzheimer's, diabetes, all of those causes of death are higher in number than firearm deaths. Now, is one better than the other? No, but I think it's worth noting that you got a lot on your plate at the Centers for Disease Control, like actual diseases called heart disease, cancer, respiratory disease, strokes, Alzheimer's disease, diabetes. These are all conditions that you could be working on. Instead, you want to go and bother people because they have firearms. I'm just not interested. Are you? News Talk 1110 993 WBT. It is the Brent Winterville Show. We're going to get on to Afghanistan here directly. Let me grab this call from Joe first up, though. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a little frustrated after hearing your report on the CDC. Mm-hmm. Back when Obama was president, mm-hmm. he commissioned a study by the CDC mm-hmm. to explore the safety and the health problems with gun ownership.
Right.
The results of that study were that about 3 million crimes every year were prevented by people who owned guns when they drew the gun on someone who either wanted to kill them or cause them bodily harm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my question to you and for the audience is, what is the strategy that Democrats are trying to put forth?
They want to grab your guns.
Well, no, I'm talking even wider. So they have a study that proves gun ownership keeps gun owners safe,
mm-hmm.
but they want to take them away.
Well, because that study will disappear. That you will not be able to find that study in a matter of months.
Yeah, but we all know it took place.
Of course.
Yeah. And we've talked before about the fact that I was in the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened last week?
Yes, I'm very sorry.
For really hurts me.
I know it does.
But when you look at the weapons that they left, they yeah. just left them sitting around.
That's right.
And nobody in the room asked, hey, is this a good idea? So what strategy does that put forth?
It's chaos. The strategy is chaos, okay? Here's the thing. I would have greater respect for a politician who came forward and just said nakedly, I'm introducing a bill to take your guns. Okay, just like at least be honest about it, okay? Instead, we're going to play this. The CDC is involved. I'm old enough to remember under Obama when he was enlisting the pediatricians around our country. You would bring the kids in for the physical or for the checkup or whatever once they were, you know, say over the age of 5 or 6. And the pediatricians would ask right in front of the parents, so does your mommy and daddy, do you have a gun in your home? And you're thinking,
they were asking everybody.
Right, but they were targeting the kids because they knew yeah. mom or dad maybe is not going to cop to it. The kid will cop to it. In fact, one of my friends back in L.A. at the time took his kid in for a checkup. And I think the child was 6 or 7 at the time. And the doctor asked the child, does your mommy or daddy have a gun in the house? And before the kid answered, the father looked at the doctor and said, well, why don't you ask me? He said, why don't you ask me?
Not going to do it.
And he wouldn't. He wouldn't.
That's right.
And the friend of mine who then left that practice because he was disgusted said, better yet, why don't you come climbing through my window at 3 o'clock in the morning and find out?
Oh boy!
So
it causes all kinds of problems. Mental health issues.
Well, there you go. Right now he's going to be flagged. But look, we know that this is the case. We know Beto wants to go get your guns. He said it during the debates. You remember when he said,
yes, he did,
"We're going to take your blanking guns." Well, okay, Beto, game on, game on. You know what? Beto should start by flying over to Nangarhar or to Herat. Or to Kandahar and go collect. We can send Beto out there to go collect the Taliban's guns that we left behind.
But I got a better idea for you, Brett.
Go ahead.
For me, for you, and for everybody listening.
That's right.
Please don't vote for a Democrat because, despite the president being elected a few years out, we can impact the election next year.
Yes, we can.
And we can impact who controls the presidency next year.
But there's a problem. And I'm glad you called, Joe. Very, very sorry for the loss of your brother Marines and sister Marines. And let me just say this. I'm gonna tell you exactly what's going on here because it all ties back together. So keep listening and stay strong, my friend. I always appreciate talking to you. That's Joe. Okay, here's what I think is happening. I'm going to put a longer form video about this out tomorrow. But here's what I think is happening. I think Joe Biden, the president of the United States, knows full well he's not going to run for a second term. He just knows he's not going to run. He's going to be too old. His approval numbers are cratering. And I think what's happening now is that President Biden has decided, you know what? If I'm not going to run for re-election, if I'm going to be a one-termer, then you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do it all. I'm going to do it all. I'm going to go for the gun. I'm going to go for packing the court. I'm going to go for busting the filibuster. I'm going to go for the confiscatory tax rates. I'm going to go for all of it because I don't have to run for re-election. And quite frankly, I don't care what Kamala Harris ends up doing. This is his thinking. I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to achieve the things that I want to achieve, and I'm going to be remembered for being the biggest progressive since Franklin Delano Roosevelt, even greater than Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I believe this is a guy who's looking at his poll numbers. They're cratering in front of his eyes, and he figures, forget it. I'm solid for the next 2 years. I don't have to worry about these guys doing thing one to me in terms of impeachment, attempt to remove, what have you. And I'm going to do the federalized voting laws. I'm going to do the gun grab. I'm going to do all of it. And I'm going to teach America the lesson that it needs to be taught, that you don't go and elect a guy like Donald Trump ever again. And I'm going to tell you what he's banking on. He's banking on the fact that Kamala Harris is not going to be the president of the United States. It's going to end up being somebody like Pete Buttigieg who's going to run. He'll be the next guy to come up out of the cabinet with his Green New Deal in and all that kind of stuff. And I think what Joe Biden's calculus is this. He's going to say to himself, you know what? If Trump runs again in 2024, the left will be so afraid of his return that they'll have to stick with whoever comes forward to come in for the term after me. That's what I think. I think Joe Biden, as much as people want to point at him and say that he's Jimmy Carter, I think Joe Biden is Lyndon Baines Johnson. That's what I believe is at play, and he's going to use all that time and energy to enact the third term of Barack Obama. I'm telling you, it's becoming increasingly clear. Why would you be so reckless in Afghanistan in this way? You are acting as if there are no consequences for these actions. It's because there are no consequences for those actions. If you want to talk about it, I'm here. 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. I am convinced that this is what he's got planned. Because he wants the fundamental transformation of America that was offered up back in 2008 and 2009. And he wants to complete that task. And it starts with taking you folks on the right and you libertarians and you freedom lovers and teaching you the lesson that you got to learn that government always wins. The House always wins. It is the Brett Winterble Show, 704-570-1110. Is the phone number to be a part of the conversation. Taliban guard at the Kabul airport reporting that the last American planes have flown out after two decades of war. There is no immediate U.S. confirmation of this. So we have, this is an ABC News special report. I'm wondering what this is all about. I don't know if we can pull that up. Perhaps the Fox feed is available. It looks like that General McKenzie is making that announcement right now that the last plane has left Afghanistan. Let's listen.
U.S. military service members who were securing and operating the airfield. On average, we have evacuated more than 7,500 civilians per day over the 18 days of the mission, which includes 16 full days of evacuations, and more than 19,000 on a single day. These numbers do not include the roughly 5,000 service members and their equipment that were sent to Afghanistan to secure the airfield and who were withdrawn at the conclusion of our mission. The numbers I provided represent a monumental accomplishment, but they do not do justice to the determination, the grit, the flexibility, and the professionalism of the men and women of the U.S. military and our coalition partners who were able to rapidly combine efforts and evacuate so many under such difficult conditions. As such, I think it's important that I provide you with what I hope will be some valuable context. When the president directed the complete withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan in April, the team at U.S. Central Command began to update and refine our existing plan for a potential non-combatant evacuation operation, or NEO, in Afghanistan. We have a framework of plans that included numerous branches and sequels, depending on the nature of the security environment. Over time, we continued to refine our plans, which included the interagency, the international community, and other combatant commands. Plans such as this are built upon a number of facts and assumptions, and facts and assumptions change over time. While observing the security environment deteriorate, we continued to update our facts and assumptions. As the security situation rapidly devolved in Afghanistan, we took a number of actions to position ourselves for a potential NEO, based upon direction from the Secretary of Defense. We positioned forces in the region and put them on increased alert. We began to pre-position supplies, and we began some preparatory work on intermediate facilities in Qatar with the support of our gracious host nation. When the evacuation was formally directed on August the 14th, we began to carry out our plan based upon the initial assumption that the Afghan security forces would be a willing and able security partner in Kabul, defending the capital for a matter of weeks or at least for a few days. Within 24 hours, of course, the Afghan military collapsed completely, opening Kabul up to the Taliban's advance. On August the 15th, in a meeting with Taliban senior leadership in Doha, I delivered a message on behalf of the president that our mission in Kabul was now the evacuation of Americans and our partners, that we would not tolerate interference, and that we would forcefully defend our forces and the evacuees if necessary. The Taliban's response in that meeting was in line with what they've said publicly. While they stated their intent to enter and occupy Kabul, they also offered to work with us on a deconfliction mechanism to prevent miscalculation while our forces operated in close quarters. Finally, they promised not to interfere with our withdrawal. It's important to understand that within 48 hours of the NEO execution order, the facts on the ground had changed significantly. We had gone from cooperating on security with a longtime partner and ally to initiating a pragmatic relationship of necessity with a longtime enemy. Into that environment, Rear Admiral Pete Vasily and Brigadier General Farrell Sullivan of the Marines, and subsequently Major General Chris Donahue of the Army's 82nd Airborne Division, deployed and employed their forces and did extraordinary work with the leading elements of our reinforcement package to safely close the embassy in one period of darkness, or one evening, to establish a deconfliction mechanism with the Taliban, to establish security at the airport, and to bring in the rest of our reinforcements into the airport. They accomplished this difficult list of tasks within 48 hours of supporting the transfer of the embassy to the airport. I visited Kabul on Tuesday, August the 17th, to see the work being done to establish security firsthand and to observe the transition to the evacuation. I left on a C-17 that brought more than 130 Afghans and American citizens out from Karzai International Airport to Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar. Our men and women on the ground at the airport quickly embraced the dangerous and methodical work of defending the airport while conducting the hand-to-hand screening of more than 120,000 evacuees from six different entry points under the airfield. We also conducted three separate helicopter extractions of three distinct groups of civilians, including at least 185 American citizens, and with our German partners, 21 German citizens. Additionally, U.S. Special Operations Forces reached out to help bring in more than 1,064 American citizens and 2,017 SIVs, or Afghans at Risk, and 127 third country nationals, all via phone calls, vectors, and escorting. We have evacuated more than 6,000 U.S. civilians, which we believe represents the vast majority of those who wanted to leave at this time. It would be difficult to overestimate the number of unusual challenges and competing demands that our forces on the ground have successfully overcome. The threat to our forces, particularly from ISIS-K, was very real and tragically resulted in the loss of 13 service members and dozens of Afghan civilians. I've said this before, but I'd like to say it again. We greatly appreciate the contributions of the many coalition partners that stood with us on the ground at the Karzai International Airport. I'm just going to single out one nation as an example of the many, the Norwegians, who maintained their hospital at the airport and who were absolutely critical for the immediate care of our wounded after the Abbey Gate attack. Even after the attack, they agreed to extend the presence of their hospital to provide more coverage for us. Our diplomats have also been with us in Kabul from the beginning, and their work in processing over 120,000 people stands right beside that of their military partners. We were a team on the ground. As I close my remarks, I would like to offer my personal appreciation to the more than 800,000 service members and 25,000 civilians who have served in Afghanistan, and particularly to the families of those whose loved ones have been lost or wounded. Your service, as well as that of your comrades and family members, will never be forgotten. My heart is broken over the losses we sustained 3 days ago. As the poem by Lawrence Binion goes, we will remember them. The last 18 days have been challenging. Americans can be proud of the men and women of the armed forces who met these challenges head on. I'm now ready to take your questions.
Thank you, General. We'll start with the lead at AP. I would ask you, because we're limited on time, to please limit your follow-up so that more people can get questions asked. Go ahead, Lita.
General, thanks for doing this. It's Lita with AP. Can you give us a sense of whether or not there were any American citizens or other civilians who were taken out on any of those last couple of C-17s that flew out this afternoon? And can you give us a picture of what you saw with equipment and other things getting either destroyed or removed at the airport before they left?
So we no American citizens came out on the last, what we call the joint tactical exfiltration, the last five jets to leave. We maintained the ability to bring them in up until immediately before departure, but we were not able to bring any Americans out. That activity ended probably about 12 hours before our exit, although we continued the outreach and would have been prepared to bring them on until the very last minute, but none of them made it to the airport and were able to be accommodated. We brought some of it out, and we demilitarized some of it. Let me give you an example of something that we demilitarized. You're very much aware, of course, of the rocket attack that occurred yesterday, where five rockets were fired at the airfield. Our CRAMs were very effective in engaging the two rockets that did fall on the airfield, and we believe they probably kept them from doing more significant damage. We elected to keep those systems in operation up until the very last minute. It's a complex and time-intensive procedure to break down those systems. So we demilitarized those systems so that they'll never be used again. And they were just we felt it was more important to protect our forces than to bring those systems back.
Okay, we're going to bounce out of this. We'll continue to monitor. The last American troops have departed Afghanistan. News Talk 1110 993 WBT, Little Beasties by request. Just about 4:53 in the afternoon. Let's go back on the phones and check in with some folks. And we go to Stan is next. Stan, welcome to the show. What's on your mind, sir?
Hi, Brett. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, I'm going to touch two subjects. I'm going to do it quickly.
Please.
With the war in Iran. Mm-hmm. And not Iran, but Afghanistan. We were over there for 20 years because it was all about laundering $2 trillion. Mm-hmm. When money goes overseas, we lose our ability to track it, and it's always been about buying influence with the powers that are there, and it's also about giving contracts to Americans who do the projects over there, and some of that money gets funneled back, and it's pre-arranged in advance to politicians' campaigns.
Yeah, it's true.
And I will tell you, I believe that leaving the $85 billion worth of equipment behind was intentional, because it now has to be replaced.
Well, that's true, and it's better than replaced. Stan, it's got to be upgraded so that you can then defeat the setup you had on the last go-round.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And so it would be interesting to know who bought stock in all those companies that are in government.
No.
Before they were left.
You don't come on. You think there's money in them there, wars? Come on.
Now, with regards to gun control.
Yes, sir.
Just up front first, I don't like guns. Never have. Mm-hmm. But what I will tell you is this, is that if your idea of gun control is some people having guns and some not, I hate that even worse, because the people who don't have guns always will live under the tyranny of those who can.
Sure.
So when Rochelle Walensky's security staff and Beto O'Rourke's security staff will give up their guns, I'll give up mine. Until then, mm-hmm. they can go screw themselves.
There you go. That's Stan. He's a straight talker there. Steve is next. Hello, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Brett. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, man, you got the analysis of Biden's half right. Yes, I believe he is making this nation look terrible, enacting all kinds of crazy things, but it ain't him calling the shots. You give him too much credit. It is Obama, either directly or indirectly, controlling all of his advisors. And if you want proof of that, you just need to go watch that Stephen Colbert interview with Obama right before the election. Mm-hmm. He's sitting in his shorts down in the basement calling the shots.
Well, I don't think he is. I don't think he is. Look, 90% of who Biden hired are former Obama staffers, right? So you that means you get the ideological underpinnings that you want. They're going to go out there and they're going to shape and form the agenda according to their whims and wishes. But I think Biden is in complete control, and I think he knows exactly what he's doing. He's on a kamikaze mission at this point in terms of politics. I don't mean that in a violent way. I mean he's just going to go for it all until he can't go for it all anymore, and he's going to jam through as much stuff as he can. Obama is far too busy doing other things. He's got an empire he runs. He's got production companies. He's making a ton of money. Yeah. He's having parties up on Martha's Vineyard. Yeah. He's not going to be picking up the phone and saying, square one, space two, square three, space six. He's not doing that.
This guy is a narcissist. Obama is a narcissist.
Yeah, but he was president twice.
Look on his face during that interview.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, we're not that far apart in terms of our contention. You're saying he's actually a puppet master deciding the moves day to day. I disagree. I think Ron Klain is the prime minister of this government. Ron Klain is calling those shots.
No, but also the long-term game plan is for Kamala Harris to be installed as president right after the midterms. That way, she could be president for almost 10 years.
No, there's no way. She's not going to be. She's not going to be president. The next person up for that job is Pete Buttigieg. Oh, watch. You watch.
No.
Yo, you watch. He's the next guy in line. He's got a very crafty game he's playing inside the cabinet. You don't ever see him except for when he goes out and pushes Green New Deal. And you have to remember something about Pete Buttigieg. He's also somebody that would be a historic character elected to the presidency of the United States. Terry is up next. Hello, Terry. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Brett. Good talk to you again. You probably don't remember me. But
I remember, Terry. What do you got?
Well, Teddy Roosevelt once said, speak softly but carry a big stick.
That's right.
Joe Biden not only speaks softly, but he don't even know where the big stick is.
Well, there you go. I mean, that'll remain to be seen there, Terry. We got to wait and see what's happening here. You know what's interesting? I'm watching these people on Twitter who are saying, well, any Americans that got left behind, I mean, too bad. They knew what was coming. I didn't know that an American being in that country carried with it a death penalty. And I think any American ought to stand up for other Americans. Just my two cents. Another hour straight ahead. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. Up in the next segment, we'll be joined by Bo Thompson. Get his thoughts on Hurricane Ida. Get his thoughts on this momentous day in which the American military forces have pulled out of Afghanistan. The final troops are out. Central Command General McKenzie says the number of Americans left behind in Afghanistan are in the very low hundreds. I'm going round and round with somebody. I'm not going to give the name of the person on the socials, but I'm going round and round with somebody who's got a really a brutal kind of an attitude. I mean, maybe you have the same attitude. I mean, maybe you're brutal. I don't know. But this individual that I'm going round and round with on Twitter, if you're following me on Twitter, you've seen it, says, if their Americans are still there, it's their own fault. There was plenty of warning for Americans. There's plenty of warning for Americans. She then goes on to say that you knew for months that this was coming. It's on you. Okay, I get it. But towards the end, you know, they made it impossible to get through the checkpoints, right? I mean, we did see that, correct? Did we not see the reports of Americans being denied access in there? And so now the question becomes, what are we going to do with these 400 or 500 American hostages that are probably going to be held by the Taliban for ransom, or ISIS for ransom, or killed on video, or whatever it is? What do we do about this? How do we handle this situation? I mean, yes, there are Americans in Afghanistan. They should not be there. They shouldn't have been there. They shouldn't have done any of it. But last time I checked, I don't think that ought to carry with it a death penalty, especially for the children who were there, maybe. You knew that this was going to happen, right? I mean, you knew they weren't going to get all the Americans out. And so now begins an incredibly dangerous phase. By the way, General McKenzie noted that the Taliban were helpful and useful when we closed down our operations. Isn't that nice of the Taliban? Almost makes up for the attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. It almost makes up for that little disagreement that we had back once upon a time when the Taliban were... It almost makes up for that. The towers, the thousands that were killed. It's really an unbelievable thing. When you think about watching this ignominious retrograde, and man, is that not just like, that is an amazing word. I heard that word so often from John Kirby, I couldn't believe it. His retrograde lines. We're going to retrograde. We're retrograding the retrograde and the retrograde. It's a retreat. We've left. It's over. Somebody who got a lot of attention over the weekend. This is cut number 13. Former Lieutenant Colonel Shell released a videotape. Stuart Shell released a videotape on Friday talking about his demand for accountability inside the United States Marine Corps. He has since resigned completely from the United States Marine Corps after a career of 17 years and has forsworn any benefits, any money, any retirement, any VA, any of that sort of stuff because he's so disgusted with this. This is some of what he had to say, cut number 13.
If an 05 battalion commander has the simplest live fire incident EO complaint, boom, fired. But we have a Secretary of Defense that testified to Congress in May that the Afghan National Security Force could withstand the Taliban advance. We have chairmen of Joint Chief, who the Commandant is a member of that, who's supposed to advise on military policy. We have a Marine combatant commander. All of these people are supposed to advise. And I'm not saying we've got to be in Afghanistan forever, but I am saying, did any of you throw your rank on the table and say, hey, it's a bad idea to evacuate Bagram Airfield, the strategic air barriers, before we evacuate everyone? Did anyone do that? And when you didn't think to do that, did anyone raise their hand and say, we completely messed this up? I've got battalion commander friends right now that are posting similar things, and they're saying, you know, wondering if all the lives were lost and if it was in vain, all those people that we've lost over the last 20 years. And he goes on to say that we're all part of a chain. While every link may not be tested, the strength of the chain is only as strong as each link, and you got to be, you know, good link, something like that. And what I'll say is, and from my position, potentially all those people did die in vain if we don't have senior leaders that own up and raise their hand and say, we did not do this well in the end. Without that, we just keep repeating the same mistakes, this amalgamation of the economic slash corporate slash political slash higher military ranks are not holding up their end of the bargain. I want to say this very strongly. I have been fighting for 17 years. I am willing to throw it all away to say to my senior leaders, I demand accountability.
So your reaction to that, certainly that is not something that ever happens in this public fashion in the military. You don't see those videos very often. And I know there are people who oppose what it is that he's saying and the way he says it, because it's such a public break with your command. But what about that central question that he is talking about? And I'd like to get your thoughts as we move through these early hours of the departure from Afghanistan of our final troops. Was this worth it? Did this make a difference? How do you feel looking back on this? News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brent Winterville Show. Bo Thompson joins us now as we cross the streams and we get together and talk about the big stories of the day. And, well, really, right now, the biggest story of the day is the fact that the last plane has left Afghanistan with our troops on board, and that a number of hundreds of Americans may be left behind, and we'll have to see what ends up happening there. But, Bo Thompson, your reaction on this day as we look back almost 20 years ago to the attack on 9/11.
Well, I heard some of the chatter about this today, and I know the Secretary of State is set to speak, but the phrase diplomatic channels, that's what it will be left to try and get the remaining people out. And I have to say that now that the numbers are diminished as far as the amount of people that are trying to get out of the country, I worry about examples being made of them. You know, I worry about, you know, symbolic things happening, as we've seen with some of the evildoers overseas in recent years. You haven't heard about them in a while, but I wonder if that ratchets back up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's going to be the question. And certainly, though, you're going to have these folks on the ground who are also going to be potentially ripe to be, you know, held for ransom, for lack of a better word, I think.
Well, and that's what I'm getting at, is now that you have, you know, a smaller number of people, and, you know, I worry about a phrase like diplomatic channels. These are not necessarily people that, I mean, there's the old phrase, we won't negotiate with terrorists. To me, that phrase, that other phrase comes into play here, because it's a terrible situation for these people to be in, and it's now that the last official plane leaves. Now what?
Did you think? Do you think that the people who have been left behind are partly responsible? I'm not saying you think this, but I'm asking: do they bear some responsibility for not having gotten out earlier? Let's say.
That's a good question. I mean, it will be, you know, armchair quarterbacking will now begin. And the one thing that I think is also worth mentioning is, now I don't know what the infrastructure of the ability to communicate will be in Afghanistan now versus where it was 2 weeks ago and for the last 20 years, at least during the infrastructure that was built. But I was talking to Teresa Payton, you know, my cyber expert, last week when this broke, and she said that essentially the infrastructure that was built by America over two decades was almost all digital. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a framework that was built with new technology. And so what I'm getting at here is that I wonder, when you know, the people that are left on the ground here, I wonder what the communication via social media,
oh my gosh,
what connection,
oh
will they have to the outside world to explain what's going on or what their, you know, wishes are. I don't know, A, what's possible now versus what was, you know, there two decades ago. But even if you have the ability there, what governmental clampdowns will happen now that the Taliban is in control?
Right, and we have to also remember, for whatever reason, I think we're inclined to think that all of Afghanistan is Kabul.
Right.
People are all over the... I mean, they're going to be in places... They might be in Herat over by Iran. They may be in Panjshir. They may be in Nangarhar over by Pakistan. I mean, you think about this, it's like this is a compounded challenge, because not only do you have to get on a flight, you got to get found first, or maybe you don't want to be found, depending on which neighborhood you're in.
Yeah, yeah, that's the next one.
I can't even imagine the idea of, like, how you have to. It's just chilling. I wanted to develop something else, though, that we were talking. We didn't really talk about a lot this morning, but it's obviously been very omnipresent, and that is this this situation with Hurricane Ida, now Tropical Storm Ida. You did an amazing job with your coverage this morning, especially with a number of your guests, breaking down just what a huge challenge this is, these transmission lines that are down in New Orleans. I mean, we're talking about New Orleans in the heat of August, while they fight COVID, without electricity and in the dark. This has got to be an unbelievably devastating situation in New Orleans.
Yeah, I just, in fact, Jerry V, if people heard him on my show this morning in the 9 o'clock hour, Jerry's a former WBT talk show host mm-hmm. who left when the Charlotte Hornets went to New Orleans,
right.
Went in with the team, and then ended up staying in New Orleans for over a decade, and he was there when Katrina hit. And he just sent me some pictures just before I came on with you of some devastation from his friends in the New Orleans area. And it's pretty bad, although as bad as it, there's a house here I'm looking at where, you know, you can see water basically halfway up the first level, you know, cars that are displaced and obviously trees down. But what he said was Katrina was worse because with Katrina the levees broke. And one of the things we were talking about with Ray Stajic and Brad Panovich this morning was the fact that here you had levees topping out, or you know, and as opposed to levees breaking. So the water sort of it's teasing coming over the surface, but because of how things have been rebuilt since Katrina, you didn't have the levees breaking, and that's a big point to all of this. So while the damage is I mean, it's catastrophic in some places. It's not as widely spread catastrophic, at least from what we can tell right now.
Yeah, and that's the problem here is, though, and when you think about some of these circumstances that are now present, right? So you've got flooded roads, you've got infrastructure that's damaged or whatever else it is. But then when you get down to, like, the nitty-gritty of life, so your car has been flooded. You can't drive your car. You've got to somehow get it so that it's going to get an engine replacement or it's going to get serviced. Or like you think about it, and all the insurance adjusters and how there's just going to be a massive backlog of everything at a time when we have a shortage of computer chips and at a time when we have a shortage of raw materials, too, to rebuild stuff. I mean, this is going to be really complicated, Bo.
Well, I mean, all power is off in New Orleans right now.
Right.
You know, we're talking about what can you do in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
If you have no power wherever you are in the world, you can't communicate with anybody. And another thing about this is, you know, there are ramifications that come our way even when you have a storm come there ashore
sure.
versus the Carolinas, and that's in the form of things like the Colonial Pipeline, which was, you know, two lines were shut down, you know, preventative. And also, as it relates to cars that flood out down there,
yeah.
it's possible those cars, Tom Blocker always talks about mm-hmm. this, you know, flood-damaged cars can be refurbished and made to look like nothing happens.
True.
But cars from that area of the country can at some point make their way on the you know, the non-official market, mm-hmm. you know, and you think about how much in-demand cars are right now.
Oh, without a doubt.
We're hearing about how just incredibly hard it is to find a lot that is anywhere close to capacity. So even though we're not in the middle of it, thankfully we're not, two things. We could feel the effects of it in ways I just mentioned, but, you know, we're only halfway through the hurricane season right
That's
now.
Right.
So we got to be crossing our fingers that, you know, between now and November 1st, we're not talking about one hitting the Carolinas because this is pretty early.
Who you got coming up tomorrow with you, my man?
We have Brett. We have Brett Winterbull at 8:35.
Woo-hoo.
I know this much. We also have Beth Troutman in for her regular Tuesday appearance, and we'll be following up on all things Afghanistan, and of course with the aftermath. I mean, this storm is not past tense; it's still moving through, albeit weakened, and we'll obviously talk about the pieces being picked up in New Orleans. It's just awful what we're seeing.
Yeah, it sure is. We're going to be saying a prayer for a lot of folks. Bo Thompson, we'll talk to you tomorrow. I appreciate you being here.
Yes, sir. Talk then.
News Talk 1110 993 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. All right, let's dive into some of the sound from across the weekend as we continue to process what it is that we are looking at with Afghanistan as we have left. The final flight has left. There are hundreds still left behind. And there's a mixed bag out there, especially if you check out the social media posting. There are many people who are saying, you know, blame the people for getting stuck, and others saying blame the military for not going and getting them. They only had 5,000 troops there on the ground. I mean, this is a tough situation all the way around. Nikki Haley was making the rounds yesterday. Here's what she had to say about the current state of affairs at that time in Afghanistan. Cut 10.
the jihadists have gotten a moral victory. That's for Al-Qaeda, that's for ISIS, that's for the Taliban. They've all had a moral victory, but it's not just a moral victory in Afghanistan. It's a moral victory around the world, which is going to allow them to recruit. It's going to allow more lone wolf situations. It's going to be more dangerous. Secondly, you look at the fact that, look at the optics. Look at what our allies are saying around the world. I mean, did you ever think that NATO was thinking about doing things without the U.S.? Are you watching now that all of our allies are having conversations without us? And not only that, you're looking at the fact that the British and the French have gone out of their way to get their citizens out, and we're telling our Americans, hey, by the way, don't come to the airport. We've got so many Americans, Trey, that are not even near Kabul. They're on all over Afghanistan, and they can't get through a checkpoint because their passports are taken and because the Taliban is not letting them there. There's a massive problem when we are trusting the Taliban to secure our airport that allowed 13 soldiers to die.
That's a hugely important point, and it's something that people keep forgetting. There were people all over the country. They're spread out all over the place, and they're in rough shape today for sure. Tony Blinken, Abe Lincoln himself, came out and defended our working with the Taliban. Cut 11.
Chuck, it's simply not the case. The idea that we've done anything to put at further risk those that we're trying to help leave the country is simply wrong. And the idea that we shared lists of Americans or others with the Taliban is simply wrong.
What was shared?
And in specific, so in specific instances, when you're trying to get a bus or a group of people through, and you need to show a manifest to do that, because it, particularly in cases where people don't have the necessary credentials on them or documents on them, then you'll share names of the list on people of the bus, so they can be assured that those are people that we're looking to bring in. And by definition, that's exactly what's happened. We've gotten 5,500 American citizens out of Afghanistan, and to the extent that in an individual case with a particular group or a bus, to verify that the people on the bus or in that group were people who were supposed to come out, American citizens, especially, again, if they lacked the right document with them, that's what we would do.
Unbelievable. Oh, we're just giving them documents. There's no way that the Taliban would know that Nick Gonzalez isn't an Afghan. There's no way that Vito Penzanini would be could possibly be anything but somebody from Afghanistan from way back. Steve O'Leary. No, he's not. Why would he be an American? That's Steve O'Leary. Steve O'Leary. Come on, it can't be him. There's no reason why. Thomas, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes, this is Thomas.
Yes, Thomas.
The thought that people are blaming the people that are left there.
Yes.
Saying that they didn't have, or that they had plenty of time to make up their mind to get out.
Yep.
A bigger argument could be made as a comparison. All these people that are facing eviction now that the moratorium is been stopped. I mean, have they not had a year and a half warning that this was going to finally come?
The eviction moratorium?
Right.
Yeah, for sure. But the thing is, if you get ejected from your studio apartment, you're not being left to die at the hands of the Taliban. That's the problem. You have an administration that seems, for whatever weird reason, enamored by the Taliban. I'm sorry that I said Taliban. I know I have disenfranchised people who don't want to pronounce it as Taliban. They want it as the Taliban. The Taliban, the Pakistani Taliban, the Haqqani network. Let me do it properly. The Taliban. I love when the president says Taliban. We are working with the Taliban. The Taliban are terrific fellows. Yesterday, he wouldn't even take a question at the FEMA setup yesterday. This is cut number 12. This is the president of these United States. He didn't want to answer any more questions about the Taliban. Here is Joe Biden.
If you're in the region, look out for your neighbors. So thank you very much, and thank you, Commissioner. I really think it all works. I'm not supposed to take any questions, but go ahead.
Mr. President, on Afghanistan...
I'm not going to answer Afghanistan now.
Can you say if we're still in acute risk?
Bye. Gosh, it's incredible, isn't it? I'm not answering any questions on the Taliban. Why does he even call it Afghanistan? I mean, if you're the Taliban from Afghanistan, why are you not then the Taliban from Afghanistan? Get more exotic. Joe Exotic. You think that's his Secret Service nickname? News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. So we've got Panthers Talk coming up at the top of the next hour. Got room for your phone calls as well to be a part of the discussion. So this this situation that has now emerged, our return from what it is that has happened there in Afghanistan for the last 20 years, we're getting more and more information out there. We're starting to see a lot of pushback. People are saying things like, this is not America. America does not surrender and leave Americans behind. General McKenzie admitted that he's the commander of CENTCOM. He admitted that we did not get everyone out that wanted to get out. Let me say that again for the people that are blaming people for not getting out. Quote, we did not get everybody out that we wanted to get out. Heather Childers, you know her from Fox. She's now an anchor over on Newsmax. Nearly 90 retired generals and admirals call for the resignation of Secretary of Defense Austin and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Whiterage Milley. Based on key roles in disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal, there must be accountability at all levels for this tragic and avoidable debacle. This is not going to improve overnight. Because, and I hate to be negative like this, I hate to be presumptive like this, but once you start hearing the stories of the people left behind, and they will come out. There are international journalists that are there from other countries. Al Jazeera is there. They'll be doing interviews with Americans. You think about this, it's pretty ugly. As one person notes, 52 American diplomats, 444 days. That was the hostage crisis from 79 to 81. Didn't we learn then, leave no American behind? Now several hundred Americans, some hostages, have been left behind in Afghanistan. General McKenzie reportedly said, there's a lot of heartbreak associated with this departure. We did not get everybody out that we wanted to get out, but I think if we'd stayed another 10 days, we wouldn't have gotten everybody out that we wanted to get out. So you had to get out at some point. This is now 100% on the Biden team. Everything that happens from this point forward is on the Biden team because they made the call. They made the call. And I know it's going to be easy to point back to the former guy, and you can certainly point to the former guy, but the guy who's there in power right now has been in power for 7 months. 7 months. Made this call. Made this decision. Can't blame the 1-6 insurrection. And isn't it interesting that you had 26,000 troops in D.C. protecting Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the 535 members of the House and the Senate for 6 months, 5 months? But you couldn't get any more troops in. You couldn't open up Bagram. There were reports in the last couple of weeks that said the 82nd Airborne was scheming out a way of taking the airport back in Bagram. And now there's reporting, by the way, while we're at this, there is reporting that there is active fighting beginning between the Northern Alliance forces in Panjshir and the Taliban, which is a place where many, not a lot, but many Afghan soldiers have gone and pledged their fealty to the folks there in Panjshir. There's some very disturbing videos that are now starting to show up on Twitter. There are public executions taking place. The Taliban is using our helicopters as mobile, if you can imagine this, I'm trying to be delicate, as mobile gallows that are being used to hang people. There, I mean, it's really, this is going to be hellish to see. And I know it's all well and good, but I'll tell you this right now. I'm in favor of peace. I don't want to see another war fought on the face of the earth if it can be avoided. But But this is the administration that gave, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars to the mullahs in Tehran as part of an inducement for their nuclear weapons program back when Obama was president. This is a president in Joe Biden. And you can look this up. If you don't believe me, go to Front Page Mag. You can read it. This is Joe Biden, who wanted to give pallets filled with cash to the Taliban to keep the economy going in Afghanistan. And now we just get this word in these last hours that North Korea is re-enriching the uranium. They're going back to enrichment. They're continuing their nuclear weapons program. What do these things all have in common? What do they have in common? They were under control to some measure when the former guy was in there. But now they appear to be spinning out of control that the new guy, the international guy, is there. And the problem is, this isn't something that is to be considered as, you know, a maybe, it could be, we don't know, let's see. This is a certainty now that innocent people are going to lose their lives. This is a certainty. People are going to lose their lives. People are going to become hostages. People are going to be forever changed. I think Joey Jones put it well. You know, Joey Jones was a bomb tech who lost his legs in Afghanistan when he was fighting down in the southern part of the country. Joey Jones, who's often on Fox, he came out earlier today and he said, it's easy to call the Taliban a friend or a partner when you haven't bled. Unfortunately, I don't get that luxury because he lost his legs to the Taliban. It's really incredible. As another person noted, we evacuated roughly 1,000 Afghans today on our last planes out. There are still Americans stranded in Afghanistan. Let's pray for those Americans. Let's pray for the families of those who were lost last week in the attack. And let's pray for our nation. I'm Brett Witterbull. Panthers Talk is next. News Talk 1110 993 WBT.